Chris, thanks for joining us.
Oh, hi, Jess. Pleasure to be here.
Now, what was the purpose of this expedition? Why were you heading down to Antarctica?
Well, Antarctica is one of these extraordinary parts of the world that I think many of us have got sort of a vague sense of.
Hmm.
But it's basically almost otherworldly. And there's never been enough scientists to actually tackle such a vast region, not just with what's happening today, but just how Antarctica fits into how the world works. And so what we wanted to do was go down and actually share some of the wonder of this amazing planet that we live on, and communicate how science works. And with the incredible satellite technology we've got nowadays, we can actually broadcast live and show people Antarctica in real time.
That's amazing. Now, it all went wrong on the way there. How did it go wrong? What happened to cause a fight for survival?
Well, basically, the expedition was planned for just shy of 6 weeks. We had an incredible team of people on board. We had scientists, we had volunteer scientists, there were citizen scientists who came down to help us, expeditioners, medics. And for the first 4 weeks, we'd collected a huge amount of data. We'd basically pretty much done everything we wanted to do. We got down to Cape Denison, which is where the listeners may have heard of Sir Douglas Mawson, Australia's great explorer, his base. And we got in there and we were getting baseline measurements and showing people incredible things. Like we saw killer whales actually doing a hunt. We were broadcasting that live. So if you listeners are interested, go on Intrepid Science, the website, and they can see the movie. We were broadcasting the first live whale hunt from Antarctica.
It's amazing.
And basically, when we were finished, we were heading home. We were coming back, and there was a massive outbreak of ice out at sea, and it swept into our path and trapped the ship. And suddenly we went from a situation where we were a science expedition, communicating science, communicating the wonder of this amazing place, to suddenly being one where the ship was hemmed in by sea ice. We had icebergs just off the vessel within a nautical mile, and you're in that situation, out at sea, you only see 10 to 20% of the ice above the surface. The rest is deep down below. So when you've got an iceberg that's, 40 metres or so high, that's a hell of a long way down, a huge sail, which basically isn't being drifted so much by the winds, but by the eddies and the currents, so, and can change direction an enormous amount.
Oh, my gosh.
The ice had pierced the upper part of the hull. And we started drifting towards the shore. And suddenly we went from a situation where following Mawson's expedition and comparing our results to his, to suddenly one where people have heard of Sir Ernest Shackleton, the most amazing person, leader of Antarctic work, and his expedition, which followed ironically straight on after Mawson's, where they were trapped in the ice for 2 years, an incredible tale of survival heroism. And he got everyone home safe, and it was terrifying. Actually, it was really not something you'd ever want to repeat.
No, I can imagine it would have just been absolutely an horrific experience to go through. How long were you trapped for?
Well, nothing nearly as long as Shackleton, thank goodness. We were there for 10 days.
Oh goodness,
and,
still.
The initial outbreak of ice had us trapped between about 2 to 4 nautical miles of sea ice, and then we had a blizzard on Boxing Day, and suddenly we were trapped in behind nearly 40 kilometres. And one of the extraordinary things was we had an amazing team with us, Jess, absolutely incredible group who just really pulled together and looked out for one another. And there was something I always remembered. Shackleton's tale of survival was remarkable. I mean, the man was incredible. And one of the things that I remember, he's been a hero of mine for years, but his big philosophy was keep it positive, keep people busy. And we did that. We had language lessons. Singing, photography, movies, of course. And we had people doing science in the labs. And then, of course, we were communicating that to the public and showing them what we were doing. But unlike Shackleton, where you have this extraordinary experience and an incredibly intense experience, and then people learned about it afterwards. Because we had this satellite technology, people knew where we were, and suddenly, there were terrible reports of, especially in Russia, where the ship was sinking, people had died, and we had to go on the front foot. We had to communicate what was happening and try and reassure people as much as possible.
And it must have been an amazing comfort as well to have that connection to a world outside the one you were living in at that point, and to be able to kind of share that story and receive almost encouragement back from people and know that you weren't completely alone.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And people were amazing. It really was. I mean, it was, and it made a huge difference to morale on board, actually. It really did, because you weren't suddenly on your own. And it was extraordinary, because you were almost in your own bubble. I mean, we were isolated in a group, and we could communicate, but we weren't really aware of what everyone else outside the world. We were just living and making sure everyone was all right. And getting words of encouragement like that from people outside really made a huge difference. It was lovely testament how positive people can be and supportive.
Chris, do you ever think you'll go back to Antarctica?
I've been back since, actually.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I know. It's extraordinary. Shackleton talks about this idea of the lure of the little voices. And if anyone who's listening has ever been, they'll know what I mean. It's the most isolating, extreme, and then yet beautiful part of the world. It's somewhere where when the wind's not blowing, you're actually, it's almost deafening. It's a cliche, but it's deafening. It's so silent. And when you climb a peak, which you see for the first, you get a view that maybe no one's ever seen before, or you knock a rock and it echoes. It's almost Martian, and yet it's on our planet, and we know so little about it. So being able to actually go down there and work and research is an incredible privilege.
As a climate scientist, have you seen a lot of change over your different trips? Are you seeing an impact being had in Antarctica?
Well, I mean, an extraordinary example was actually going to Cape Denison at Mawson's Hut. Now, this is meant to be the windiest place in the world, and the reason is... they have these incredibly fierce winds in Antarctica called catabatic winds, and they're really cold, dense air masses. It's just on the top of a plateau of the Antarctic, actually 2,000 metres high. And it's a bit like opening your freezer at home, Jess, you know, where the cold air pours
out
onto the floor.
Yes.
Well, think it ramps up massively.
Oh, so my goodness.
It's supposed to be the windiest place in the world. Mawson experienced 70 kilometre an hour winds on average. That was the average.
Gosh.
It got up to hurricane speeds of 200. And they documented all this. They did all these scientific observations. I mean, this was true baseline science. They were communicating what they were finding. They were getting people excited and engaged about science. But when we went there, we kept looking up at the plateau, looking for wisps of snow or something where the wind would suddenly start funneling down towards us. There's fantastic photos from a century ago of people on all fours doing science and trying to work with these horrendous conditions. But, I mean, we never saw that. Not that that particularly is climate change, but one of the extraordinary things we found was that actually the ice was melting on the surface so much it was almost like a stream of water pouring off the ice cap. We got up to 4 degrees centigrade.
Oh, gosh.
When we were there.
And, that's a chilly Sydney morning.
I know, that's right, exactly, and that's in Antarctica. And the incredible thing was, while we were there, once we were trapped, we actually had rain as well. And Mawson was there for a year and a half, and he never saw rain.
Gosh.
So things are definitely changing in some parts. And that's one of the things we need to know. We need to know more about it. There's so much water trapped in the ice sheets that you don't have to melt much to actually drive major global change. So even though it's off a map for most of us, it's beyond the horizon, what happens in Antarctica has a big effect globally.
It does indeed. Chris, you've got some amazing stories. This book sounds absolutely fantastic. We're going to have to leave it there, though. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jess.